Hey everybody, welcome back. Got another episode here for you today. Trying to get back on a more normal schedule, so trying to keep it at least a week between uploads, and I think this is just under a week, so we're getting a little better. I had a little time before I go into work today, and then after work go play in a 2-5 game. So hopefully the next couple episodes I will be reviewing a 2-5 session. But first, today we're going to be focusing specifically on hands I played. I'm going to be doing a little hand review, or a little session review, I should say, of a previous session I played. So definitely look forward to that. But before I get to that, you know, welcome back to the Semi-Pro Poker Show. As always, I am your host, Curtis Umstead. This is the show where we are taking our journey from becoming a semi-professional poker player to becoming a full-on professional poker player. And this is our fifth episode, and we've had some, you know, pretty cool developments. I like how it's going so far. I've had interaction from people actually listening to the show. I've had people discuss things that they want to maybe hear or things they like about it. In some cases, things that they don't necessarily like about it. And that's a pretty cool, you know, part of this whole thing. I know I mentioned in the first or second episode that the interaction is really going to drive this show forward, and I've had more than I honestly expected. So thank you to everybody, and please, by all means, continue to do that. Continue to interact with me as we, you know, move forward. So yeah, like I mentioned, hopefully next week I'll take some of these hands that I'm playing from tonight, 2-5, and I might be playing Thursday as well, some 2-5, so I'll kind of hold off on that for a little while, but I'll definitely review that, just in case some people, you know, some listeners haven't even played 2-5, you know, they've played up to 1-2, and that's the biggest stake that they've played, and others maybe have played 2-5, but are a little inexperienced, they're not quite sure what the difference is, which there are some, but for the most part, really, the biggest differences that I've noticed is I've seen big differences from home game 1-2 and casino 1-2. Comparatively, I've seen big differences from home game 2-5 to casino 2-5. So that'll actually be interesting because in about a week and a half, I'm going to be going up to Maryland Live Memorial Day weekend. One of my good friends and a former, you know, if you guys ever listened to the Whale Fishing Poker podcast, a friend of mine named Scott Yates helped me out with quite a few episodes. So he's going to be flying up from Atlanta to go up there, and we're going to meet and play in a couple tournaments, possibly. Definitely playing some cash games. I definitely want to check it out on a holiday. So we'll be playing Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. So I'll definitely have some hands from that, too, and that's in about a week and a half. So definitely keep a lookout for that. There's going to be lots of Poker Center, but I'm pretty sure after this episode, the next one we're going to focus on something else. But today, let's go ahead and get to this hand review. So, last week I played a very interesting session, for sure. This was actually a week ago tomorrow, and you know, for the most part, this was after I had that massive 810 winning session where I completely went it broke even from between two sessions. And this is what followed up that, and we're definitely on an upswing, for sure. I even played a tournament on Saturday and even cashed in that. It was basically a min cash, but we at least cashed. So definitely back on the right track in terms of where we were just a couple episodes ago where things were not going that great. So glad to be back on track. But anyway, this is that 1-2 game that I've discussed before, and it didn't start off great. You know, I was actually getting into some really, really, really weird spots, just kind of running some pretty, getting into some poor situations, and, oh, sorry, I got my dogs in the background here. All right, sorry about that. So, had that happen, and anyway, so, Yeah, it just wasn't a good start to the session. You'll see that in the first few hands. But I definitely played well, and I didn't tilt, and I really came into this session a lot stronger. That win in the previous session definitely helped me, but I was more actively aware of being able to handle some of this stuff that was happening. Definitely a lot better than I did a couple sessions ago. So, anyway, one of the very first hands we played, probably the second hand of the night, I accidentally thought I was big blind, so I threw out a red chip, which is a $5 chip. And I was actually under the gun, so they gave me the option to take it back. And I never straddle, like ever. But I was in a really weird kind of good mood, just kind of being social and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So I said, sure, why not? I'll straddle. I've probably straddled 3 times in my entire life. Just to kind of briefly go over straddling. Unless it's under the gun, it's never good. It's literally never, ever, ever good to straddle under the gun. You're literally forcing yourself to pay more money in one of the worst positions in the entire table, or on the entire table, for no reason at all. You know, it is nice when it limps around, essentially, and you can try and steal it preflop, but if the game is so loose where people aren't going to fold, then that's a problem. And funny enough, you'll actually see something similar happen here, just to kind of spoiler a little for you, but from the button, I think it's okay if the game is very loose passive. Like, if people are going to limp around a lot and either fold to your raise on the button when it gets back to you, or if they're going to call and then they're just going to fold when they miss on the flop. Like, fold lots of hands. In that case, I definitely think you can make an argument for it. Sure. But other than that, definitely not under the gun. Definitely not, especially if someone opens. Like, say you straddle to five, you're playing a 1-2 game, you straddle under the gun, and a tight player makes it $20. You know, one person calls, it gets back to you. Are you really going to put in 15 more with, I don't know, let's say you look down at 7-9 suited? Like, why would you do that, especially from under the gun? How many times have I told you that winning poker in the long run is making less mistakes than your opponent? That's just a fact. So, by doing that, you are making a mistake. A pretty costly one at that, a $20 mistake. So definitely keep that in mind. So anyway, I straddle for $5 under the gun with ace-10 of hearts, okay? And it limps 4 ways, and it gets back to me. And I decide to make that move. I decide to make it 25 more. Again, I made notes that I never straddle. It's okay from the button. I'm still debating on it if the game is soft enough. I just don't like the idea of paying more money when you don't have to. Like, paying more money pre-flop. When you don't have to, you know, it can make some nice situations, but it can also compound in the wrong direction. So just definitely keep that in mind. Anyway, I only get one caller though, so it almost works. Flop comes king 10-4 with 2 hearts. So the 10 is the 10 of spades, and the king and the 4 are both hearts. So we flop middle pair with the nut flush draw. So we flop pretty much as good as we can possibly think we can. And this guy leads out for $40. So this guy is. I think I've talked about him before, where he's just a really odd player. He just does lots of really, when I say unconventional, he just does some really weird things. And what I mean by that is sometimes I'll see him just check, call, and then lead the river with a flopped top pair. Or he'll call down and sometimes even just shove a middle pair. And he'll limp big pairs and all of a sudden play them stronger on the river, even with an overcard. It's just super, super weird. None of it makes any sense, and none of it is good play. Let me make that clear. Like, there's a saying, or it's kind of a strategy tidbit, where some players are hard to play against even when they're not good because they do so many weird things. They do so many things that are outside the box that they're not even really trying to do. Or if they're trying, they're thinking about it incorrectly, but it's so bizarre, and you just never see it infrequently that sometimes it works. I think I talked about a hand a couple episodes ago where this same villain, he basically limped preflop with 10s, limp called preflop, and I had 4-6 and the board came 4-4-king. I think I bet out, and he called. The turn was a 7, and bet out, he called again, and the river was a king, and he just moved in with 10s. And it got me to fold because I thought for sure this just looked like a king. This looked like he had rivered kings full and, you know, that I was just behind. And so I mucked, and he flipped over tens, and it was the most bizarre thing ever. But he said he was bluffing, but at the same time, like, what the... It makes no sense to do that. You literally had to get a miracle river card to represent that you had a king. So what, were you just trying to rep that you then had a king the whole time? Like, it just... None of it made any sense. You know, especially in a limped pot where he checked top pair. Some of it was just really, really, really bizarre. So anyway, he'll just do weird stuff like that. It doesn't make any sense, and he's not a winning player, but sometimes he can be hard to play against because of these really, really bizarre moments. So I'll probably just have to start calling lighter more often. I think that's just one way you adjust to these people. You might have to just take more chances with them. The variance might increase a little bit, but you don't really have a choice. Anyway, so he leads for $40. He has about $150 left. I could easily shove here, and I honestly think that might be the correct play, but I decided to just call. It's debatable. I don't think it's really a mistake. You know, sometimes he can be bluffing here, too. I didn't mention that. He can just bet really weird hands, like gut shots. This guy just does all sorts of weird things with all different hands. It's like he does the inverse. Like, with a pair, you think he would bet, but he would check. But with a draw, as weak as a gut shot, you would think he would check, but he would bet. It's just super fucking weird. So... I guess to keep bluffs in there, I call, but that's debatable. If he has a king, he's getting it in, and we're not hating the world when we're getting it. We have a lot of equity with a pair and a nut flush draw and an overcard. Definitely enough to get it in there. So, anyway. Turn is an ace. Okay, so the pot is about, $150. And so we turn two pair, aces and tens, and he just moves in. Okay, and I call, and he has ace-queen for, like I said, he led out with a gut shot in a pot where he limped and then called preflop. Like, he limped the straddle, then called, and then just led a gutter. See, he just does super weird things, but he's not thinking. I don't know what he's doing there with ace-queen. I don't know if he's, like, betting that as a bluff. I don't know if he thinks he has the best hand. I have no idea. That's the thing. So he can be pretty tough to play against. That's my point. So yeah, it was just super bizarre, but that's what I mean. Anyway, we decided to run it twice. I'm friends with this guy, and I sometimes like to do this in friendly home games. You can definitely debate whether or not I should be doing this, especially because I have him crushed so much here. About a 70 to 30% equity, I'd say, or maybe a little more than that. I can actually run it here really quickly. Actually, I was way off. I'm an 80% favorite. 81.8, so 82%, and he's 18.2%. So I really have him crushed here a lot. I'm going to win out of here. I'm going to win here over 4 out of 5 times. So, you know, I like to just keep that friendly mindset in the game. It helps you come, it helps you get invited back, all that sort of stuff. I like to do friendly things if your opponent likes to do that sort of stuff. So we run it twice, and I know he wins the first one. We split the pot. I think the river was a jack, so he rivered a straight, and we ran the river again on the second one, and it bricked out, so I won with that. So we split the pot. You know, not a big deal, but definitely had a massive equity stake, and if I had run it once, I actually would have lost completely, so that would have been really, really bad. So being results-oriented here, we got it in good. That's what matters. We got it in good against a really weird hand. So that's what I mean. That guy bluffed the flop, essentially, with a gutter, or semi-bluffed. And when he turned an ace, he just went with it. So against those types of players, you just might have to get it in lighter if you have any type of player like that in your game. So hand number two, I open kings from under the gun plus one for $10, and I get three callers. Okay, and the board comes out ace, king, seven, all hearts. So we flop middle set, but we flop it on a completely monotone board with all hearts. The villain here is in the small blind who decides to lead for $30 into 40. Some people would say that why would somebody lead out with a flush here? And for the most part, you don't see that too often. Especially this villain a long time ago used to be way more loose aggressive. Like, he could be semi-bluffing here a lot. He's kind of reined it in the past few months that I've played with him. And something was just off. I could just feel it. That, like, let's say he has ace-jack offsuit or ace-jack of clubs, and he's just kind of betting out just to kind of see where he's at. Should we really raise there? Okay, because he doesn't have any equity to catch up. He's drawing dead, essentially. He'd have to get running quads, you know, or running full house. It'd have to be something crazy like that. Do we want to raise and essentially get him to fold that sort of hand? And I'd say no, because we're trying to get value, right? That's the point. But you could argue that, hey, Kurt, what if he bets here, gets called, turn is a brick, and he just shuts it down because he's afraid of hearts? I hear you. And that is a valid point. So it just depends on what you want to go with. In this particular case, I think this opponent could actually continue to call if he had a hand like that. Okay, it actually would make sense. And also, some people could make the argument that if you raise here, you could get it in with, like, against ace-queen with the queen of hearts, you know? Like, if he's leading with ace-queen offsuit and he has the queen of hearts. Or jack of hearts, or something like that. It's a valid point, too. That's why it's... Definitely, in a nutshell, you would think that raising here would be better, but something was just off. You develop these, you know, and when I listen a lot to Crush Live Poker, Bart Hansen talks a lot about developing this, like, poker sense, you know, like this, like, sixth sense you have. And I kind of know what he means, because something just didn't feel right. He was leading from the small blind into three people. He doesn't really, he's reined it in, a lot of his looseness and his aggressiveness quite a bit. So... I thought calling here is kind of just the better play at this particular moment against this particular player. Debatable. We can always talk about that. So anyway, I call, okay, and everyone else folds. The turn is the 8 of diamonds, okay? So pot's about $100, and the small blind leads for 50. I call again, just in case he's, you know, he's betting those weird top pairs, and he thinks maybe I just have a flush draw, you know, something like that. You know, even though, like, if I have jacks with the jack of hearts or queens with the queen of hearts, something like that. You know, I don't, this guy thinks a little bit, but is he a winning player? Probably not. And the river is the five, or excuse me, how the fuck did my notes get all the way down there? Anyway, the river is the deuce of hearts. So the front door hearts come in and he kind of doesn't like it. But he then bets 50 again. And this got me thinking, like, what hands would he continue to bet here? With this particular sizing, where essentially a scare card has now come in. Okay, so we have to think about what his hand range here. Would he continue to bet ace-jack offsuit without a heart? Or ace-queen offsuit without a heart. Would he continue to do that when the front door hearts come in here? I think we all would probably think it's likely not happening. Would he bet $50? I mean, that's never getting a fold, right? I mean, or is the bet ever getting called by a worse hand? I think we would all think, no, probably not. So what does he have here? I think it, for a while it got me thinking that he had led the flop with a flush. And because I don't know what else is continuing to bet this river card when the fourth heart comes in. Now, would he bet, like, the nut hearts this way? Now, that is a good point, and I don't think he would. This is kind of similar to that hand we discussed in, I think, the second episode of the podcast where, you know, the villain in that hand had shown up with a small flush on a scary board and didn't quite know what to do. He felt like he was supposed to bet. He didn't know sizing, and he bet small. And the same thing happened here, so I thought for a while, like, could I bluff this guy? The thing that kind of got me a little hesitant is this guy can be a bit of a station. I could see him essentially being like, you know what, fuck it. If I got bad beat with my hearts, then I got bad beat. I'm going to stick with it the whole way. I've seen him do stuff like that before. But he has reined in a lot of those looser tendencies. So I thought there was a slight possibility, but it was early in the session. I said, you know what, I'm just going to lay this down, and I'll find a better spot. It's close. I really did think about it for a while, because I just don't think it's possible for him to have a super strong hand here. And let me reiterate, like the 9 or the 10 of hearts is not a strong hand here. Like, if I raised, right, if I turned my set of kings into a bluff here, the 10 of hearts or the 9 of hearts is a bluff catcher. That means you are only going to call if you think I'm bluffing. Like, I'm never going to show up with a worse flush than I'm bombing. Like, let's say I made it 200 on the river or 250. I'm never going to show up with a worse flush because it's just not going to happen. You never, none of us ever see that. So, it's just, it was really close, but I decided to fold. And, yeah, he turned over, 10-9 of hearts. So, he had flopped a flush, led the flop with it, which I like. I like fast playing hands. I actually like the way he played that. I liked his bet on the turn. Could have bet a little bigger, but, you know, I definitely liked the way he played it. But something, I was correct. Something just felt wrong. That's why I decided to just kind of slow down with my kings there. And it could have gotten pretty ugly if I had done that. So, yeah, and he bet small with the 10 of hearts. I did ask him. I was like, well, do you think that would you have folded if I had raised the river? And he said he might have. So I just decided to go with the safer option, but I was definitely thinking correctly on the hand, I think. All right, hand number 3. This villain is going to open from under the gun for about $7. You got one caller up front, and I call on the button with 6-5 of hearts. Villain is a very big person in my life. That's all I'm going to say in terms of hinting who they are. They can open a little wider from under the gun than your standard villain. So I think calling with 6-5 of hearts here is fine. I think if you wanted to argue 3-betting here with that point made, I think you actually could make that. If they are opening wider, then there's more hands you can get to fold, all that sort of stuff. You can play in position in a 3-bet pot if they do call, and they're a thinking player, so you can definitely, you know, add some strategy to that. So I think it's not a bad play to 3-bet here, but I decided to just call. Again, I don't think it's a big mistake. I think they're both pretty close. I don't think it's a mistake at all, really. I think both are fine. The flop is King 10 8 all hearts, so we flop a flush. Okay? Under the gun, villain checks. Villain 2 checks, and I decide to bet 20 into this pot. Now, is it a little odd that the villain who opened under the gun has checked? It's a little weird. She definitely will see bet a lot more often. So the fact that she decided to just shut it down was a little odd. Villain 2, you know, just he's a really loose fish. We've discussed a hand with him before. He's not a winning player. He just can't help himself with draws, and he could have missed here, but he could also have a heart, too, that he's just checking. So we definitely want to bet here to get some value from some other hands. So I bet 20, but surprisingly, both players call. I didn't really expect that. I'm a little curious as what the range is to this villain one here. A little odd. She could, you know, let's say she decided to not see bet. I could say she opened, like, ace 10 with, ace-jack or ace-nine with the ace of hearts or something like that and just decided not to c-bet. It would be really weird. Exactly. I'm not really buying that argument either. So it's a little odd, but maybe she just has a 10 and is just kind of hanging on here thinking I'm bluffing, which she definitely thinks I can bluff a fair amount. So I'm definitely liking my position here, but I am being a little cautious too. The turn is the deuce of diamonds. Complete brick checks to me. I bet 45. Both people call again. I didn't even analyze Villain 2's range here. I think his range is a ton of draws. It could be any pair on the board. He's just that loose. Villain 1 calling again. I think just calling here weighs it a little more towards draws. Just a little bit. Because I think a stronger hand would have raised. Like if let's say Villain 1 had flopped a flush or something like that, or flopped something like that. I know there's not really another hand, a stronger hand you can flop. I would think a check raise would have came on the turn. That would have made sense to me. So anyway, I'm a little more comfortable in this spot. I think we're good here, like 99% of the time. And the river's the 9 of spades. Okay, so the pot is about, it's about $200. And Villain 1 checks, and Villain 2 now bets $60, and he leaves himself about $120 more. what came in was the front door straight draw. So he definitely could have something like that. He's that bad where even on an all-heart board, he could just continue with the straight draw. Maybe if he had a heart in his hand, too, like if he had queen-ten with the ten of hearts, or excuse me, queen-jack with the jack or queen of hearts, something like that. He's that bad. He could definitely be doing that with that. So with that being played, villain one has now checked all three streets. So it's likely villain one is not strong. So really we want to target villain two here. Okay, we want to make sure that he is who we're going after. And if we think we haven't beat 100% of the time here, which I definitely think we do, then we need to get him all in. So I decide to move all in. And I did I didn't mention stack sizes in the beginning of this hand. I had both villains covered. I had about 500 in front of me. Villain 1 had about 250. And villain 2 had about 250 as well. So I move in. And to my dismay, villain 1 snap moves all in. And unfortunately, we are never, ever good here. Villain 1, I'm assuming when she snap moves all in, she's a thinking player. She's a good player. So I don't know what hand she is snap moving all in with that I beat with 6-5 of hearts. Is she ever doing this with a straight? No. Is she ever doing that with a missed draw? Obviously not, because I'm all in, so she can't ever be bluffing here. Ever. So essentially, this looks like a massively slow-played, like, nut flush. And, I kind of shit myself when this happened. But, at the same time, it just so happens where this hand played out in the way that it did, that I had no choice here. I was going to go broke with the way this hand played out. So here's the thing. Like, we haven't even showed our hand yet. I'm pretty sure we all think that we're not good here. If villain one had check-raised on the flop, or had led the river, or something like that, I could have either lost less by just calling the river, or I could have just folded and completely cut my losses. Like, if she had check-raised the turn, I don't think we're ever good there. And especially in a multi-way pot, which diminishes the chances of bluffing in a multi-way pot, especially deeper post-flop, like when we're further along on betting streets. If villain 1 had led, if it had checked to me, if villain 2 had not bet his straight on the river, I don't know what my sizing would have been on the river. I probably do bet, but I definitely fold to a check shove. Even if it's like $50 more, I just know, well, that's probably a little bit. But let's say I bet 100 and villain 1 moved in for like 100 or 110 more. I could see myself getting away from that. A check shove after check calling the whole way, that's essentially just a min raise, I'm folding there. So with the way the hand played out, where villain 2 led the river, I had no choice but to move in, and unfortunately that's where I got stacked. So I wasn't even remotely upset with how that hand played out. It just sucks that, villain 1 woke up with ace 3 of hearts. That's what she had. She had ace 3 of hearts, and villain 2 had queen jack and still called off his whole stack. Like, after villain 1 had shoved, he still called off with just a straight. I mean, you see what I mean? Just bad. So those are the types of spots you want to look out for. So, anyway. Next hand, I open 10s from middle position for $10. I get two callers from up front. The board comes out jack 5-3 with two clubs. Villain leads out for $16. Again, that really, really strange guy leads out for $16 here from the small blind. Big blind folds and I call. Okay, I think I can be good here a lot. He can lead with weird stuff. Like I said, he doesn't have to just lead with jack here. He could be leading with draws and all that sort of stuff. A turn is a 10, so we turn a set. That was pretty nice. We turn a red set too, so it doesn't. The draw, the front door clubs do not come in. He checks, I bet $30, and he just folds. So I have no idea what he bet. He could have bet like 6-7 for a gut shot and then decided to say, fuck it, I give up. I have no idea what he had. He could have bet with ace 8 for complete air and just gave up. So that's what I mean. Just the only nugget I take from that hand is the fact that, you know, I called pretty light with just, you know, below top pair, which I think for these games can be kind of light. But, you know, just knowing your opponent, making sure you're paying attention to these spots, for the most part, most people would think folding 10s there is the correct play on the flop. But if you know your opponent, you can go a little deeper than that. So make sure you're paying attention. Next hand, a 10-9 of clubs. I open from under the gun plus 2. I really don't like that. I'm kind of stuck in this session at this point. I don't like opening suited connectors from up front, which, as much as I like 10-9 suited, it's not smart opening that from up front. And under the gun plus 2 is close, but it's still early position, so I really don't like that. It's definitely incorrect to look to open that here. But anyway, I do it anyway. And two callers. Flop comes Jack 8-3 rainbow. Okay, so we flop an open-ended straight draw. I bet $20 into two players, one caller, the other's fold. The villain in this hand is the guy from earlier who had he had 10-9 of hearts when he flopped a flush and just led earlier. It can be a little sticky, be a little loose, but you know, he could have a draw here as well. The turn is a 10. I bet $53, okay, into about, say, about 80. And he thinks for a while and calls. Now, what hand is he thinking for a while? And he thought for a good 20 seconds. For him, that's a long time to decide whether or not to call. Does he have a strong hand here ever? I think not. And I know he respects me. So what's our play here? What are we looking for here on the river? You know, what his hand range has essentially dwindled to, like, a weak jack, like a jack 10. Or maybe even, queen jack's not really weak, but his hand range is pretty capped. He never has, like, a set here. He never has two pair, never has jack 8, anything like that. He could even have a hand like an 8. He could have ace 8 and just be calling twice on the turn. So, or 9-8, something like that. So he's definitely not strong here. I think a big river bet, I have seen him make some folds recently where this could possibly work. If I decide to bluff any sort of river. It just depends on the river card. So that's my plan moving forward. I'm not too afraid. I can improve my hand. I can make a straight. I can make trips. I can make two pair, which would kind of be a really weird spot with two pair there with the four, with a one liner to a straight. But we definitely have a lot of equity here too, and I think we can bluff. So I think we're actually in a good spot, despite what it looks like just from to the naked eye. The river is an ace, brings backdoor hearts. He checks, and I decide to bet 115. I think this card is a beautiful card. It brings in a flush draw, which he definitely would have called with quicker if he turned any sort of hard draw. He would have taken a lot less time on his call. It's a massively high over card. So unless he has a hand like ace-8 or ace-jack, I think I can get a lot of hands to fold here. And that's what I decided to do. I bet 130. Could have bet a little more possibly to get it done, but I think, you know, you want to bet the least amount in a bluff to make sure it works, and I think this was a perfectly good sizing. And sure enough, he thinks for a while, and he folds. So, a success. Next hand, I have jacks. I'm still down about $150 at this point. I 3-bet jacks, and get it in with the strange villain from earlier, and I call, and he has ace-king. Run it out, and he rivers an ace, and I lose. So the session was not going well. I mean, I thought I was playing great. I thought I played even better than the session I did last week, and I was down, but it wasn't affecting me. I'd worked a lot on my mental game this week. I'd made sure I was much more prepared, and I was just ready to, I was hoping that it would start turning into my favor, but at least I was playing well. I was not remotely upset. I was in a massively different place than I was a couple weeks ago. And the moral of the story is, you know, make sure you're continuing to play well, because one hand can turn an entire session around. And I mean that. A session can be going so shitty. You can be playing great, and it's just everything is going against you. You're running below average in terms of, you know, the pots you're getting involved in, where you're having lots of equity and you're getting turned and you're getting rivered and you think nothing's going your way. But it's always important to remember, you can always have that one hand that completely turns a session around for you. And that's essentially what happened here in this next hand. So well, excuse me, it's a small pot. So I'm down to 391, and I'm in for 600. So I'm down about, you know, a little over 200. I'd won some small pots to get back up to this point, and I get dealt aces, and I open from the cutoff for $11. I get four callers, okay? So the pot's about $55. I'm in position to everybody. We're involved in a good spot for sure. All right, so yeah, so anyway, we're in a good spot. And the board comes out ace-queen-eight with two diamonds, okay? So we flop top set with a front door diamond draw out there. Checks to me, and I'm going to bet $30 into 55. I raised pre-flop. There makes no sense for me to now check and do any sort of slow play, especially with a front door heart draw out there on the flop. No way. We're never doing that. So I bet $30, kind of consistent, about half the pot. And the villain in the small blind makes it 70. Okay, and this villain is one of the players I've talked about before. He's definitely a winning player. Definitely one of the stronger players at the game. Can do some maniacal things when he's tilting, but for the most part, he's not my favorite player to play against in this game. He can just be a little tougher, a little more loose aggressive. But in this spot, that's a pretty big raise to make it $70 on this flop. And he's also got me covered, by the way. So we're about 200 big blinds deep going into this hand. So all of this pot is already going exactly the way I want it to. The ace was a diamond, so there's no way he has, like, ace-x of diamonds that he's doing this with the nut flush draw. He could have, like, queen-x of diamonds, but he could be raising with an ace. You know, a stronger ace, or maybe he has ace-queen, something like that. I'm sensing strength here, so I decide to make it $40 more. I meant to... The way the chips were laid out, I was trying to make a min-raise, like, to make it 140. Somehow that just didn't happen. So just make sure you're paying attention, because I kind of missed that, and I think that's because I wasn't counting properly. But the raise stood. They somehow allowed it. So he calls. If he had air, if he just made some weird bluff on the flop, he's folding. So he definitely has some sort of hand here. There's no doubt about that. The turn is a five of clubs, okay? So just keep in mind, on the flop, it went bet, raise, and a three bet and a call. And now villain leads for 100. So what is he repping here? I think he's repping that he has some sort of flopped hand. I don't think he's just calling with a set. But he could just be going with ace-queen. Something like that. If he has queen-x of diamonds, he could be going with that too. So that's pretty much what I narrowed it down to. And I only have 170 more on top of that 100. So I move in for 270 total. And villain calls with ace-king, and he's drawing dead. So I doubled up to close to $800 off of that one hand alone. So this was important, because this is what I mean. You wait for that one hand, and you make sure you're playing well. And I think I played that hand fine. I liked the way I played that, you know. And it can always turn around, so don't give up on a session. Don't start playing beyond what you're supposed to be playing. Like, for example, if you're playing in a loose game and you're running bad, but the correct way is to play tight and take people, you know, for value when you flop hands, that's what you should still be doing. Don't start playing looser to try and make up losses like I did before. Don't start doing moves that just don't make any sense. Make sure you have a reason for everything that you're doing, and it's going to work out. That much I promise you. I had a couple other hands here, but they were both PLO. They both kind of played themselves out, and there was a hand where I got it in with middle set and dodged a lot of equities from other opponents and won a $600 pot. I mean, it was just massive. So I ended up close to $500 on this session as well. So definitely almost exactly even from the downswing. And then I made about $60 from this tournament. So essentially back to even. So that's just, it's what it takes. Just have patience, play good, and these things will turn around quickly. Sorry to kind of rush this off here, but I got to get going. Next episode, we're going to talk about an interesting subject. I might throw a couple hands in there, but for the most part, there's a subject I want to talk about. In terms of, it's more based about studying, about why you're playing the game, like what do you want out of it? It's like not just setting goals, but why are you playing the game? It's going to be a little discussion I'm kind of excited to do this one because it's a little more. This one will be a little personal. I'm going to delve into really why I play this game, and what do I want moving forward in terms of, like, I know I want to be a professional, but, like, why am I doing it? What are the real reasons that I find this more enticing than a full-time job, or what is it, but what ramifications could it have? It's going to be real theory, and I think it's going to be real personal, and I hope for a lot of interaction because I want to hear other, others' points of view on that as well. That's going to wrap it up for us. We have taken another step to becoming a professional No Limit Hold'em poker player. I am your host, Curtis Umstead. I will see you on the next episode. Until then, I will see you.